Hello and welcome to the Empowered Hormone Podcast, where we pull apart all those taboo topics, periods, parasites, poos, hormones and more. Let's question everything you've been taught about your body. I'm your host, Sheridan Decker, a gin-loving gut health nerd, passionate about debunking myths on birth control, period pain and IBS. If you struggle with bloating or your period is less than pretty, then join me as we chat about everything relating to gut and hormone health. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Hormones Podcast. I'm your host, Sheridan Decker. Now, today I have the privilege, the honour of speaking to Alice Child, who is a somatic sexologist. So she helps, because plenty of you guys listening are going to be like, I don't know what that is, which we will break that down today. So that is totally fine. But she helps individuals, couples and groups achieve happier, healthier and more fulfilled sex and relationships. So Alice not only works with clients in her practice in Sydney, but she also works globally via telehealth, which is amazing and much needed, and also runs regular sexuality and mental health workshops. In 2024, she launched Pillow Play, a collection of online sex and intimacy games and skills for couples, which I'm very sure we will unpack more of today. So thanks for being on the Empowered Hormones Podcast, Alice. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just nice to unpack some things with people, because I feel like this area particularly is something that is still quite taboo in a sense. Like I'm going to say 90% of my listeners probably don't know much about sexologist as a standing point, and then also somatic sexologist. So Tell us a little about, how did you get into this? Where did you start? Why is this your passion project?
Totally. Well, maybe I'll start by just explaining what a somatic sexologist is then, in that case. So a sexologist is anyone who's studied, you know, the science of sex, so the anatomy, the physiology, the neuroscience, as well as also, you know, the cultural influences that surround sex and sexuality. And I've also got, you know, counseling certifications and skills as well. And somatic essentially means anything to do with the mind-body connection, which you can imagine in sex is very important, helping people get out of their head and more into their body. A lot of the concerns that people come to see me about is because they're too in their head when it comes to sex for one reason or another, and helping them, you know, drop into the body, listen to the body, and have a more present and mindful experience is often a really important part of the work that I do. How I got into all of this work, I guess I've always had a real fascination with human sexuality and how beautifully diverse it is in terms of what turns people on and what works for different people. And I've also been pretty lucky because I've always found the topic of sex pretty easy to talk about. It's never been a topic that I've found wildly awkward or uncomfortable. And I think because of that, I started running workshops. That was actually my first foray into the space. Just as a bit of a passion, really. I had, in my mid-20s, discovered firsthand the power of sexual exploration and sexual discovery, not just in terms of your own, you know, sense of self and connection to others, but also just really feeling the knock-on impact that a fulfilled sex life can have on, yeah, how you show up at work, your overall creativity and vitality and empathy in the world around you. And I was, wow, you know, sex is so important for who we are. And yet we have created the society that makes it this taboo, awkward, uncomfortable, sex negative topic. And that's, you know, so harmful for so many people in their relationships. So it was that sort of period of discovery, I suppose, that really prompted me to go and start those workshops. And then I enjoyed them so much that I then ended up getting certified and doing my study and made it my full-time work, which I've been doing for about 4 years now.
Wow, that's incredible. I want to circle back to the somatic stuff because I find that really interesting, because probably only in the last couple weeks, maybe month or so, I've started, like, someone said to me, oh, you've got to like go down this somatic journey, as in they started, one of my clients starting a somatic, I want to say like counseling or psychologist or somewhere along those lines. And she was like, wow, this is game changing. And then I started listening to somatic meditations on Spotify, and they talk a lot about the havening touch. And it's like touching your arms and like rubbing your palms together and this whole like connection of mind, body. Yeah. Well, like you said earlier, that mind body connection, I found it really helpful with nervous regulation, but I can understand how taking that and mixing that with a sex first approach would be so important, because you're right, you're trying to get out of your mind and back into your body. And bang on, I think every single female I speak to who struggles with like bacterial vaginosis, thrush, or any kind of vaginal concerns, and a lot of that's linked back to their sex life and going, I just don't feel good about my sex life at the moment. A lot of that is they are the classic overthinkers and they can't reconnect back to self.
Yeah, exactly that. And when I first discovered somatic work, it just made so much sense to me. You know, we're very cognitive and logical people, and I've got a fascination with psychology. So that the story is important. The head is important. What turns on your brain is important. But we often prioritize that at the expense of listening to the body and being able to understand what turns on the body and connect to what the body's trying to tell us. And actually, when we slow down and listen to the signals our body's sending us, it's giving us information all of the time about how safe we feel, about, you know, whether we need to slow down or ask for something different. And we often override those signals or just don't even listen to them. And there's a lot of information that the body is giving us if we learn how to pay attention.
Is sexology almost a form of counseling then, or is it, because I mean you're working, obviously you're running workshops which are education, awareness, teaching is sort of the way I understand it, but a sexologist in its purest form, is that working one-on-one with couples, is that, or singles, is that how it works?
Yeah, so there's all sorts of different terms you might hear thrown around: sex therapist, sexologist, sex coach, sex counselor, somatic sexologist. You know, there's all of these different terms. And it really depends on different people's pathways to get to the work that they're doing and the different certifications and professional organizations and qualifications that they have. So if you're wanting to work with someone within these spaces, it's always good just to have a check-in with what pathway they took. And most of us offer free calls as a consultation ahead of deciding whether or not to get started, which is a great chance to dive a little bit deeper into the way in which that person works. So because I have that embodied counseling and somatic counseling background, yes, the somatic side of things comes into my practice, but it absolutely doesn't always. You know, a lot of other people focus a lot more on psychology and sex therapy, or more about the coaching and sex education skills. So it's really individual depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, yeah. So how does it work for you then? Because I'm thinking if you're using the somatic side of things and you're trying to get, I'm just going to stick with my target marker here, which is, let's say, women from their 30s to their 50s is kind of primarily who I work with. And they're coming to me with obviously gut and hormone concerns, but a lot of that is then they also got anxiety, overthinking, stress, overwhelm, all this stuff, which obviously the nervous system plays into gut health, but then it's also going to play into sexual health. Where do you even start in addressing that, getting out of, that overthinking and focusing in on their pleasure, on sex, on the here and now, on their body's awareness? Like, how do you even start with something like that?
Yeah. So somatic sexologists teach sort of five main tools, I suppose, for getting out of your head and into your body. And depending on the person in front of me, I might tap into different ones depending on what they're presenting with and what they're wanting to get out of session. Obviously, this is in addition to exploring the erotic mind and turn-ons and mental blockers and all of that, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, when we talk about libido and understanding sex drive. But the tools for getting out of your head and into your body, they're things like mindfulness. So practicing how to slow down, notice when your mind has hijacked in the moment, thinking about whether or not you'll orgasm for the last 5 minutes, or what your body looks like, or what your partner's, you know, wanting, like, oh my goodness, the last 5 minutes, I haven't even been here. I've just been in my head. And the process of mindfulness is noticing when your brain's hijacked and taken you somewhere unhelpful and knowing how to bring it back to the here and now and into the moment. So that's one piece. I read a research paper recently that showed that people who practice more mindfulness find it easier to orgasm, which makes so much sense to me because it's the same skill of, oh, my brain's wandered, bringing it back. Oh, there it goes again, bringing it back. So that's one piece. Another, and then the other four are all physical, almost like body hacks that you can do to help you get back into the body when the brain is really busy. One of them is touch. So obviously touch helps you get back into the body, variety of really good mindful touch, but also things like exploring new places on the body, trying different tools like sex toys and lubricants and oils, and just giving yourself beautiful, amazing, varied, pleasurable, mindful touch rather than mindless, one-dimensional, habitual touch. The second one is movement. So if you're getting in your head, a lot of people are very, very still and clenching all of their muscles and going, why is it not working? So movement's all about, yes, creating some tension, but also releasing that tension. So Kegel floor exercises, squeezes and releases, as well as movements in the pelvis and the hips, which is great for circulating blood flow and building arousal, as well as just simply, you know, change positions, change it up to help you get back into the here and now. The third one is sound. Again, if you're in your head, you're often silent. And it can be really helpful to get you into the body, just make some authentic noises of relaxation or pleasure. And it also has the added benefit if you're with someone else, it turns them on as well, and it turns you on. And then before you know it, you're both back in the moment. And the final one is breath. So breath is a really useful tool to get us back into the body. It's the heart of Tantra and meditation for a reason. And it can really be used as the erotic pump of the body, you know, and it's, you know, because it's so good at nervous system regulation, we can use it and use certain breaths to feel more relaxed and safe and connected. And we can use it with faster breathing to become more aroused and turned on and energized. So being really aware of what your breath is doing rather than just sort of holding it or doing really shallow breathing, which again is what most people are doing when they're in their head, and being like, what can I do with my breath to get me back into my body? Yeah. So obviously when I run through them, I don't get everyone to do them all at once because they'll short circuit, but just choosing one and practicing with one to start with.
Yeah. Yeah. And after like picking one of those, getting back into your head is what would then directly link into that female pleasure, that arousal, that turning back on, because there's a sort of assuming, but if you're getting caught up in your head, like you said, then you're struggling to have an orgasm because there must be, like you just said, there must be more of a connection to have that release in a sense, or I don't understand exactly how it works, but there must be surely.
Yeah, well, the biggest habit that people fall into is obsessing over orgasm. You know, will it happen? Will it happen too quickly? Will it happen at all? When will it happen? What noise will I make? And when we're doing that, when orgasm becomes the center of our sexual experience, A, it's less likely to happen because we're not in our body. We're not feeling all of those delicious sensations. We're just up here instead. So the more you think about it, the less likely it's going to happen. But also, it's a really one-dimensional and frankly quite boring relationship to have with sex, that it always has to be about the destination, not the journey. And it's about getting from 0 to 9 as quickly as possible and then staying on the edge as long as you can and then reaching orgasm. Like, it's a really, you know, it's one way of having sex, and it's quite limiting in terms of the experiences that it will give you. So really removing that goal of orgasm and instead just making pleasure and connection and curiosity your goals is what helps people expand their definitions of sex and have, as a result, much bigger and better and more like full-bodied experiences as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you feel like a lot of women struggle with arousal or knowing how to get aroused, whether that's with masturbation or whether that's with sex or both of those things. I feel like that might be because it has been, I mean, it probably feels less taboo to you, but if I asked any of my clients, I can know immediately, most of them would be like, oh, I don't know, like I don't really know, I haven't really thought about it, or I haven't really explored, you know, what turns me on or those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's a great question because, yes, I think everyone at some point has struggled with how to turn themselves on, what touch their body likes, what turns them on, what am I into? And even I feel so disconnected from my libido and my arousal that I don't even want it. You know, it's just not a priority right now for one reason or another. And that is so fair. It's called being human. We're not sexual beings all of the time. Like, life is busy and there are so many other priorities in life beyond sex. But a lot of people come to see me because they do want it. They do want to feel more in touch with this part of themselves again, or at all, if they've always struggled. And it's a lot about understanding, you know, what is libido, what is desire, and what helps it. And a really helpful framework, which helps a lot of women that I work with, is it comes from an amazing book called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. And she talks a lot about the science of libido and explains it very simply like a car. So at any one point, we've got certain things on our accelerator pedal and certain things on our brakes. And our accelerators are everything that turns us on. So things that help us feel confident, connected to our bodies, connected to our partner, overall just well and confident and turned on humans. And the brakes are your opposite. Everything that makes you feel disconnected from your body, disconnected from your eroticism, things like tiredness, you know, stress, poor mental health, physical health concerns, pressure surrounding sex, awkwardness, embarrassment, fear of rejection, all of those things are your brakes. And yeah, they're constantly kind of battling one another. And when there are too many brakes on the pedal, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to trigger your desire for sex, to trigger that arousal. And so a lot of people who come to see me, it's because they've had a lot of brakes on the pedal at one point of life. And often even when that initial brake is gone, so for example, there's a lot of brakes straight after childbirth, for example, a lot of reasons why sex is off the table. And then little one is old enough now and the physical and mental and emotional recovery has happened. I'm ready to reconnect to this part of myself. And I feel like it's just disappeared. What's going on? The break is gone, but my libido is not magically coming back. Again, it's a bit of a cycle. It's a bit of a use it or lose it situation with libido sometimes, because the less we think about sex or prioritize pleasure and connect to our bodies, the less we then desire it. So it's about triggering it again, right? It's about slowly working out how to gently start introducing more accelerators into our life. And this doesn't need to be like, go masturbate every day. This is about, you know, reconnect back to what gives your body pleasure. So often as homework, I send people off for massages or, you know, ocean swims, meditation, reading erotic fiction again, things that help them get back into their body and start to pump the juices, I suppose, of their erotic mind and start thinking about, you know, these things again to slowly start to reconnect to your accelerators.
Because I feel like it could be tricky as well if an accelerator is that your partner's libido is running a lot higher. If, you know, running with the kid example, if you have just had a baby and you've therefore, you know, pulled back for, like you said, obvious kind of reasons, and then you're trying to reconnect with yourself at whatever point that feels right. But if, even though it may not be obvious pressure, there may be that guilt that you're like, well, I should be ready and I'm not ready, or I want to have sex, but I just don't feel like it, like, and I don't know how to reconnect. And I feel like that must be tricky. And even if there has been no kid and I have a lot of women with like chronic gut issues, and therefore the bloating, the pain, the constipation, all those things make them go, sex is the last thing I want. I just want to go poo. Like, it's just not a priority for them.
So, yeah.
But as that starts to shift and heal and things feel better and they feel more confident in themselves again, because they don't have a big bloated, pregnant looking belly every night, then yeah, trying to find that back is one thing. And I love those tips you gave, but also having that, you know, potentially that mismatched libido must be really tricky in a sense as well.
Yeah, it's really challenging. It's the most common reason I work with couples, because when you think about it, when you realize how frequently libido does fluctuate over a lifetime because of these changes in brakes and accelerators, you know, contextually and life stage and, you know, it changes for all sorts of reasons. What are the odds that two people are going to magically have the exact same desire for sex all through a life together? So these changes and these challenges are so, so common, especially when one person is like, no, I still have the sex, have a really high sex drive and really I'm wanting a lot of sexual intimacy, and the other person really isn't. Of course, that can put a lot of pressure on these two people. And often what I see is the person with the higher sex drive starts to feel like their needs aren't important, like they're no longer desired by their partner, they're not attractive, they feel a lot of rejection and a lot of resentment. And on the other side, we've got a lot of guilt, we've got a lot of pressure, we've got a lot of, you know, resentment as well, that their needs don't matter, that you know, they don't want to do things against their own consent. And so as a result of this sort of divide, the topic of sex has then become associated with all of this pressure and negative energy, which of course is not an accelerator for either person. And so it's really challenging to learn how to lean forward and find a really happy and connected middle ground. And so what I often start with these couples is a bit of communication skills and helping them both really hear in each and understand what's been going on for each other, so they really feel like their needs and their side of the story is heard and understood, which is a really important piece. But also, it's often about finding non-sexual intimacy. So you know, when I talk to these couples, most of them have stopped, you know, making out, having showers together, having baths together, date nights, flirting, you know, little cuddly moments, you know, bum squeezes, all of the things that don't necessarily lead to sex, but that help you stay connected as lovers, not just flatmates and best friends and life partners. And these little moments of non-sexual intimacy are so, so important to keep that energy alive. And often they've stopped doing them from a person with a high sex drive standpoint, to stop doing them for fear of rejection, for fear of not wanting to put pressure on their partner, for like, well, what's the point? You know, I'm feeling all of this rejection, so I'm not going to want to do that. And the person with the lower sex drive has stopped doing them for fear of it becoming sex, for fear of it being read as initiation, and not wanting to lead their partner on. So both people are actually leading away from the very thing that they're both probably craving more of, which is let's just connect without pressure of sex. And so that is where we often start, love languages, essentially.
Yeah. I love that. And that makes complete sense, because when you feel safe and I guess, yeah, seen is probably a good word as well, across, let's just say, a whole day, as opposed to it's 9 p.m. at night and it's like, okay, now I've got to just magically click my fingers and be completely attracted to you and ready to jump into bed with you. And especially, I guess, also for females, I know this is true for males as well, but let's just stick with the female theme going on here, that there is that emotional connection, which is, you know, so important as well. It's not always just about, like you said, like just about the orgasm or just about the getting naked with someone. It's that across the day. It's like, hey, you checked in with me. Hey, you did the dishes. Hey, you helped me out with something. Hey, you put the kids to bed. That was awesome. I could go have a nice long shower. Like, it would be that accumulation of things across the day, across the week, across the whatever, which then, like you said, would get represented in the bedroom, I suppose.
Yeah, bang on. I often say foreplay is the whole relationship. You know, and that's exactly what I mean by that, is you don't think that, you know, putting, you know, doing the dishwasher is foreplay, but actually when you know your partner's love languages and you know that actually they're a huge acts of service person, and anything that you can do to reduce their mental load and feel like a team is going to help them just feel more connected to you and more supported, then yeah, by the time, you know, intimacy comes around, you're much more likely to feel ready to connect. And again, it's not about it being transactional. It's not tit for tat. It's not, you know, I'll do the housework if you have sex with me tonight, because no one wants sex to feel transactional or to feel sort of used for your body, which I hear a lot of as well. Mm. So it's about how can we meaningfully, you know, get each other's love languages met and needs met without zero expectation of pressure of sex, but knowing that the more connected and appreciated and desired we feel, it's more likely to happen. And it's also really, I think, important to tell you about two types of desire. So there's one type of desire, which is called spontaneous desire. This is that feeling that a lot of people have in early stage relationships or when they're younger, where you could just be like walking down the street and your phone vibrates and it's that person you started dating. You're like, oh, I'm in the mood. Like a lot of seemingly out of the blue feelings of desire and arousal and feeling horny. That's spontaneous desire, right? And it's what most people think of when they think of desire, because it's what we see in films and in books and in porn, right? Spontaneous. But most women, actually, statistically, it's more common in women, shift from spontaneous desire to what's called responsive desire in a long-term relationship. And this is essentially the idea that desire with the right context and headspace and stimulus, your accelerators again, can be triggered, responsive desire. So this is the feeling of, oh, I'm not in the mood, but I want to be. Mm. You know, I want to want it. I want to be in the mood. And often when we don't know that this exists, people feel like they've lost their libido because they've shifted from spontaneous to responsive. And they're sort of waiting around for the strike of lightning, spontaneous desire to happen. And it's often not going to until we learn how to trigger it. And when I say trigger it, people go, oh, that doesn't sound very sexy. Like, I want spontaneous passion. But actually, it can be extremely sexy. You've just got to know what accelerators work for you. So, and this is why, again, it sort of really changes the game when you think about things like, for example, initiating sex. Right? If you know that one person's in the mood, had a spontaneous desire, they want to initiate sex with their partner's three steps behind them, right? They're thinking about something completely different. They're in the middle of a work email, whatever it is. You know, you've got to think like, what will help that person trigger their desire for sex? And yeah, for some people, it's sneak up behind them and like start kissing their neck. For some people, those are the accelerators that work. But for other people, like, oh, you know, really? I'm in the middle of this email and like, you know, that's not welcome right yet, right now. And so then, you know, trigger the disconnection, right? And the rejection and the guilt and blah, blah, blah. So it's about learning how to initiate intimacy and trigger your partner's desire for sex in the way that works for them. So for example, using that exact same situation, you know, if I was there typing on my email, partner came kissing my neck, I'm like, oh, give me 2 minutes to finish this email. Otherwise I know I'll be thinking about it all night. It'll be a huge break. And then I haven't showered all day. I feel kind of gross. You know, I haven't even like left the seat for 3 hours. I'm just going to go and have a shower and give me a 10-minute head start just to like wash off the day and then come in with a glass of red wine and your beautiful naked body. And then what I've done here is I've identified my breaks, the work email, how I feel in my body, you know, touch that's moving too quickly. I've asked for my accelerators, you know, a shower, wine, nudity, steam, reconnection, like, and then do that again. And then I'm going to be able to trigger my desire. Yeah. And so it's really about getting curious about how we can start doing that.
Yeah, that's awesome, because you're not only getting curious, you're also presenting a really good communication front. So you've checked in with yourself, like obviously on one point you've checked in going, hey, like let's just say to you, hey, Alice, oh, wait, where is my head at? Oh, yeah, I'm frustrated. I'm in the middle of this. I would be the same and be like, I've got to get this thing done because no one else is going to do it right. So you've checked in with yourself, but then you've also been able to communicate that. And I feel like that communication is really important, because that's something that so often gets lost because we don't know how to communicate that, or we don't want to let them down, or we feel guilty straight away, or we let frustration take over because we do want to be there, but we want to finish this thing. And I guess learning, and that's probably more a relational skill, right? But learning how to communicate your desires effectively. And that might be like in that foreplay instance there, like getting to the shower and washing the day off. But then I guess that also comes into the bedroom as well, because I feel like women, men as well, but women particularly here, may not always be able to communicate what they need or how to that point as well.
Exactly. It's, you know, so many different skills come into just the simple act of asking for what you need. First, you have to know how to listen to your body and go, what does that feel like? Well, you know, what is it needing today? Because what worked for you yesterday might not work for you today for all sorts of physical, like hormonal cycle-based reasons, as well as, you know, brakes, accelerators. So what worked yesterday might not work today. So you've got to be able to listen to your body, and you've got to be able to know what you want. Like, go, okay, that's where it's at today. I know what tends to work for me is XYZ thing, or XYZ touch, or toy, or fantasy, or dirty talk, or whatever it is, because I know what might help. And you've got to know how to ask for it. You've got to get over that mental block and barrier and find the words. And a lot of people, it feels really uncomfortable in their mouth to say the words and to ask what they're needing. So there's a lot of skills that goes into the simple act of, you know, kiss my neck, you know.
Sam. And yeah. I feel like that, like you said, like being able to actually say that to someone, like feeling safe and vulnerable and whatever it is, because you don't, I can feel that feeling as I think about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, being able to say to someone, like, yeah, kiss me here or touch me there or do that thing or don't do that thing, like that would be a really, really hard skill to learn and overcome in the bedroom. And it would only happen or work really well when there is that trustness and safeness and vulnerability between two people, surely.
Totally. And that's why I created Pillow Play. So Pillow Play is a collection of 15 really genuinely fun sex and intimacy games for couples to play on date nights and things like that. They all don't have to be foreplay, although often I get couples who, you know, play games like, oh my God, it was great foreplay. I'm like, great, you know, that's fantastic to hear, but they absolutely don't need to be. They can just be played on their own and just be a really fun night. And they don't necessarily have to involve sex. They're things like massage games and communication games and learning about each other's body kind of games. And they've been designed first and foremost to be a genuinely fun time. So helping people who have, for one reason or another, made the topic of sex feel a bit pressured or a bit uncomfortable. So first and foremost, we just want to have a fun night together and just connect. And secondly, they do sneakily bring in skills. So there's one, for example, which is what made me think of it, called the bossy massage, which is helping people learn how to ask for what they want, starting in a non-sexual way. So just receive a massage from each other, but instead of just lying back and, you know, receiving whatever it is that your partner decides to give you, which I think is what most people's experience is getting massages is, you know, it's like, how's the pressure? Fine. Yes. Lie back and tolerate whatever is about to happen to your body. It's about the opposite of that. So putting the power really in the receiver's court and getting them to try and be as vocal and bossy. So a bit to the left, down a bit. Okay, I've changed my mind. I want to flip over. Now I want head scratches. Okay, now I want some oil. And really trying to empower that person to get bossy. And the other person, as the giver, has to keep asking the question, how could this touch be even more perfect? You know, do you like it like this or like this? Do you prefer it faster or slower? You know, would you like me to go down a bit or stay where I am? And every time they get a piece of feedback or a bit of bossy instruction, they reply with thank you. Because the aim of this game is, can we give the most perfect touch possible? So obviously each time their partner finds the ability to ask for what they want, that's giving them really valuable information to be able to give the most perfect touch possible. So they say thank you every time they get that feedback. And then you swap over and you try it the other way around. And obviously you can increase how erotic this is with things like candles and oils and nudity, or you can just do it in a really like silly and fun and playful way. So that's like an example of the kind of games that are in there that fun, but they also end up teaching you some really important skills in the bedroom.
And building that connection, right? Because some people are, in a way, get disconnected from your partner, whether it's life, work, finances. And it may be that when you go to have sex, you don't feel safe, comfortable, whatever, asking for what you need, or you don't feel like they care as much that, you know, you're having an orgasm or whatever it is. But if you go and work in those series of games, like I said, for fun, for connection, for learning about what the other person wants, the other thing that that makes me think of is in your newsletter series, maybe it was, you have a downloadable sheet which has, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 pages of like heaps of different things. It was like, I don't know, there was a whole lot, even things like blowjob, threesome, different, like there was a whole range of stuff and going, you know, is it a yes, maybe, or a no for you? And I was just like, this is the simplest, best tool ever. Like if you and your partner sit down and do that, like you don't feel like you have to, I don't know, explicitly express, no, I don't want that. But if you're writing it down, you're kind of going, oh, that's a maybe, or I'm not sure. It doesn't feel so, like if you're confronted with it, doesn't feel so intense.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's called the sexual bucket list. And you're right. It is a little long. I got a bit over enthusiastic.
How much I include.
Yeah, I know. And it's so funny because every time I talk to a couple who've done it together, the stories are so great because, you know, it has such different impacts on different people. And just in terms of opening up the conversation, identifying some yeses, like, wow, I never knew you were into that. How have we not had this conversation yet? Or identifying boundaries that are really important to know, like what your no's are, as well as like really important being like, what are some maybes that we both share, you know, and maybe we wouldn't have had the confidence to bring up, you know, something like that without knowing whether the other person was into it. But when you see side by side that your lists match in some ways, you're like, oh, yeah. What, you know, let's get curious about that. Like what would we need to do to feel safe trying that? Or what, you know, why is that hot for you? What does that look like for you? And start having these kinds of conversations.
Yeah. So what does your day-to-day look like now? Like, are you seeing, like, are you going through this stuff with couples and doing, you know, sessions, or is it just mainly your workshops, or, and what kind of things are taught in your workshops? Because obviously everything you've shared is just incredible and amazing. And I'm like, oh, I need more of Alice in my life. But how do people learn these things? Obviously pillow play is one way people can access and buy that online, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So that's like an online selection. And so there's, for each game, so it's 15 games, and then there's also like a little optional sex ed video that accompanies the game. So, for example, we've already spoken about body massage. The accompany one there is like asking for and giving feedback and like a whole piece around that. So that's pillow play, and that's probably the, I guess, the most accessible way of working with me. You can just like go and get that in tomorrow. On top of that, yeah, the vast majority of my work is working with people in session. So both individually with both men and women, either because they're wanting to work through a particular sexual concern that they have, like pain or difficulty orgasming or erectile issues or whatever it is, or just because they're wanting to start their sexual liberation journey and want, you know, some support on that journey, versus couples who, again, you know, some couples have had people buy sessions with me for wedding anniversary gifts because that's wanting more tools and, you know, even hotter, more passionate sex. Yeah. And other couples who have the sorts of things that we've already talked about here today, like they've got a specific thing that's happening for them and they're wanting to reprioritize their relationship as lovers. And I'm open to new clients at the moment for both couples and individuals. And the workshops, I normally run a workshop every month or so. In fact, recently it's become more frequent than that. I've got a lot of workshops coming up. And these are all sorts of different topics. I do one monthly in Sydney, which is sort of like a dinner and sex education evening with a different topic each month. I do erotic writing workshops in Paddington over a glass of wine and a slice of cake and start learning more about the erotic mind. Rewriting. I do tantra workshops as well, like tantric massage workshops, learning the basics of tantra. All sorts of events.
You're very busy, very diverse. There's so many things. I love it, but I'm also like, how do you fit all that in? Like, that's, I think I just watched a video earlier about your, do you have a tantric massage coming up maybe?
Yeah, next week.
Yep. I saw that and I was like, oh, that's so cool and so interesting and stuff. And you're right, like, when I look at your Instagram and I look at, I guess, breaking down all the different things around sex, right? Like whether it is massage, whether it is erotic writing or play or opening up the erotic mind, or whether it's games or whether it's toys or whether it's communication or whether, and I love that because you're creating something more out of it, and you are building a connection, you are building fun, and you're building play, and you're getting people seen. And it's, yeah, just the whole concept around it, I think, would really open so many women's minds. And I know so many people listening today, they would be like, oh, it's not just, yeah, 9 o'clock, I have to switch off the day completely and go into bed and have sex. It's, there is so much more around it, which, you know, incorporates so many different skills and communication and connection, which I just love. I think it's so important. And I just think it's so great for like mental health, sexual health, physical health, all those different aspects. So incredible.
Yeah. And it really is about reframing, like, what even is sex, right? Like, obviously, penis and vagina sex is not only, you know, not the most helpful definition because it's not inclusive to people of, you know, all genders and sexualities and body parts, but it's also a really boring, one-dimensional viewpoint of what sex is. And it's, you know, a very penis-focused view of what sex is as well. You know, when most, you know, 85% of women need external clitoral stimulation to reach orgasm, like, of course, just penis and vagina sex is not going to lead to the most satisfying and pleasurable, like, erotic encounters for most women. So it's really about understanding, yeah, what turns on your brain, what helps get you in the mood, what helps get you feeling connected emotionally as well as physically to each other. And then when it is time to start having sex, like, what does sex even mean to us? Like, what are we even going to do to make sure it's as pleasurable and as interesting for both of us? And yeah, that's often where the sex education side comes in, and understanding anatomy and bodies and why actually it is so important for women to get external touch, and understanding just how long it takes, actually. One little thing that I do want to squeeze into this session is, you know, understanding the anatomy of the clitoris. You know, it's so important. Most people don't know that the clitoris is a full organ, and what you see outside the body is just the tip of the iceberg, and there's this whole network underneath the skin, and this whole network is erectile tissue, just like the penis is, meaning, you know, when we get turned on, it fills with blood and becomes more sensitive and more swollen, enabling sex to feel pleasurable. And unless that process has happened, unless that erection has happened, sex, especially penetrative sex, at best feels eh, and at worst is painful. And that process, that female erection, you know, we get erections too, we just can't see them as easily because it's under the surface of the skin, just takes longer, you know, on average about 20, 25 minutes. And that's, you know, if lots of accelerators are present, if there's lots of breaks happening, then that could be even longer than that. So it's really about understanding your body and understanding the body of your partner, and what's going on when arousal builds and how long it takes, and, you know, why giving yourself time and foreplay and external touch and all of the things that are in pillow play are so important, because it'll get you to better sex anyway. And that's often why people aren't craving it or desiring it, because the sex that they are getting isn't as good as it could be.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, removing those breaks and understanding, like, actually going and verbally saying that, going, hey, it might be 20 to 30 minutes, you know, that just all of a sudden takes all the pressure off you as well. It's like, oh, actually, this is a process. I don't need to be there in 5 to 10 minutes. Like, I don't, and that's okay, and that's normal. And I think so many women don't even understand their own body, like you just said, and even the whole clitoris explanation would be newish to them in a way. But also, does their partner understand that, whether it's male or female, but does their partner understand that? I think that's the real key there as well, because it's like you've got to then be able to explain that or show that to them, or also, you know, feel okay going, hey, this is going to take me longer than it takes you. I think that's important.
Totally. And, you know, sometimes when I give that explanation to people, like, oh God, 20 minutes. I don't want to wait. You know, I don't want to wait 20 minutes. Like, I want to just get it over with. And I'm like, well, therein lies the problem. Like, yeah, that is a mindset of, I just want to get it over with. Yeah. You know, that's not hot for anyone. Like, what's the point in doing something if your mindset is, I just want to get this over with? Yeah. So then it's like, okay, we're not having sex for the right reasons here. Let's do things that you do want to do and that do feel good. And if that isn't penetrative sex, then it's not penetrative sex. It's like, what are you wanting? Is it a date night? Yes. Is it, you know, what is genuinely what you're needing and craving? And the more we do that, then we can get to sex.
Yeah, I love that. Like you said, you're doing it for the wrong reasons then, because it's obviously not pleasurable and not giving you the outcome that you want, or not building that connection, or getting, you know, you're not getting off or whatever it is. Well, then, yeah, what is the point of it? Because the other person is usually not getting as much pleasure if you're not getting the pleasure out of it as well, because then they end up feeling guilty and shit, and you just like, oh, yeah. I can see how totally. That whole situation would unfold and not nice.
Yeah, exactly. And when they hear that from their partner, you know, that their partner's like, I'd prefer just to self-pleasure or masturbate rather than you do something you don't want. Yeah. You know, like, and then when you start to realize there's so many options, right? Often we think someone initiates sex and the options that you've got is no, and I'm going to feel guilty and they're going to feel rejected and it's going to be disconnection and a fight or, you know, whatever. Or it's yes, and I'm going to have to do something that I'm not in the mood for, right? Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people have given themselves as their options. Mm-hmm. But actually, those are not the options that you've got available to you. It could be, you know, well, option one is, yes, I'm in the mood. Great, let's do the thing. You know, on the rare instances that both people magically have spontaneous desire at the same time, that's one option. But most of the time, it's going to be all of this gray area in between. It's going to be, ooh, as we talked about before, I want to want sex, but I'm not in the mood yet. Like, how about we start with a pillow play game, or we have a massage, or we have a bath together, or we have dinner and like light some candles and turn off Netflix and just see where the night goes. And you sort of give options for connection with the hope that it'll trigger desire, but no pressure if it doesn't. Sometimes it's, ooh, you know, I'm not in the mood for sex. And to be honest, I don't even sort of want it, you know, tonight for one reason or another, but I'm totally happy and excited by the idea of, you know, you getting your needs met with me. So this could be, you know, self-pleasure in front of me. I'll lie on your chest and like tell you dirty things, or, you know, I'll, you know, go down on you, or, you know, that's really fun today. I'm just not wanting touch or anything myself. And then sometimes, yeah, the option is, okay, I'm not in the mood for sex. I don't want it. I'm also not in the headspace to be around you when you're being sexual. So in this instance, it's like, what else can we do instead? You know, what else can we do to connect tonight instead? And be like, maybe it's a board game night. Maybe it's, you know, cuddles and pizza and a chill and talking about our day, because what's going on for me at the moment. And what can we do to still, you know, feel really connected tonight, given that the person initiating is probably seeking, you know, connection. And if you're doing that one, if you're saying the no, then what can you say in terms of offering up initiation in the future? So, but I promise this weekend, you know, let's play a pillow play game, or I promise this weekend I'll initiate sex, or, you know, in the next time frame that works for you. Again, just to show your partner, this matters to me too. Like, just because it's a no today doesn't mean it'll be a no and never ask me again. It's just like, you know, no right now.
And like you said, like sometimes having a board game and a pizza night and wine might actually still end up leading to sex, because this is not like, I can't imagine it right now because my head's so full of these other things and I just don't feel like I'm in the mood and I really want to switch off. And when you build that connection, you then, yeah, you open it up for other things. And maybe it doesn't, but maybe it does as well, because yeah, it's at the end of the day, you both are seeking that connection in sort of its basic and rawest form, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And the more you do this and open up the communication, the more you learn about yourself and each other when it comes to what does work for us, yeah. You know, and just like there are five different love languages, i.e. the way that we all naturally like to give and receive affection and feel wanted and feel important to someone. There's the same with erotic languages, you know, the different ways that we all like to give and receive erotic intimacy. And unless we know our partners and know, you know, we can be talking completely different languages, yeah. You know, which I see all the time as well. And, you know, one person's doing the thing that they would love and the other person's like, what are you doing? And vice versa. And again, unless you open up the conversation, how can we possibly learn? Like, we're not mind readers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's I love that, because that does come back to, like, right, you said at the start about the whole love languages things. And I've been thinking that this whole time. I'm like, man, we so undervalue them. Like, you so forget about them. And then you think back, you think about, you know, I think about the way I love people and the things I do for them to show them that I love them is what I want as well. You know, I don't initially think, oh, what did they really want to need? I'm like, oh, I'm words of affirmation. I love, you know, hearing things from people, and I love telling people things, and I love, you know, but sometimes I'm like, wait a second, Sheridan, that's not actually what they need. They need an act of service, or they need something else. And you're right, it comes back to sort of that awareness and going, wait a second, like how can I best help them to open that connection as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, you know, and if this emotional connection isn't as important for you when it comes to sex, if you are able to have sex and use it as beautiful stress relief, and, you know, not something that you overthink or over worry about, and you're like, well, sex just feels good, and that, you know, that's all I'm needing from it. Then again, like, you are not your partner. You know, we all have different things that turn us on that feel important in the bedroom. And I'm not just talking about like kinks and fantasies and, you know, it turns on our brain, but just what makes you feel like this is something that we're experiencing together and a place that we go together, rather than just a stress relief. And there's a time and a place for all of that, you know, but it's about being able to be clear around like what is great sex for each of us. And that let's both be getting the sex that we're wanting and needing. Sometimes, yeah, a lot of the couples that I work with that are feeling disconnected when they have sex, it's because there's also another framework which some people find really helpful, which is thinking about the three sexual styles, which is, why do people have sex? And one of them is having sex to feel. This is called trance. These are people who go really inward. They shut their eyes. They go on this almost like journey of pleasure, and it's very, very inward. And this is what most people do during masturbation. And it's what you do if you tend to like the lights out and sort of go on your own journey, trance. You have people who love having sex to connect. This is called partner engagement. This is people who love to be in positions where you can see each other and move together and eyes open and talking and, you know, sat like making noises together, like connection. And then you have the final one, which is having sex to express, which is called role, which is using the erotic as basically the adult's playground, I suppose, to express all of these sides of yourself. You know, sometimes you want to be more surrendered and not have to think. Sometimes you want to take control and feel more dominant and confident. Other times you'll be more playful and silly, and everything else in between, right? And sex is a really great chance to step out of the confines of day-to-day life and express different parts of yourself. And when we know our default, right, the way that we tend to on a Tuesday night default, you know, often it's great to jump between all three, but when people are lower energy, they tend to just fall into one of them. And often what I hear is one person's very trance-based, they love to go inward, and one person's very partner connection or express-based, they like to share. And you hear things like, where do you go? You're not even with me. You know, you're not even there with me. Like, And they're both actually, you know, the trans person is often having a really great experience, but it's just gone really inward. And, you know, they're just having different types of sex. So it's about helping that partner engagement person learn how to go inwards and feel their body and, you know, enjoy going and experiencing like more somatic embodied sex, and helping that trans person know how to open their eyes and come out and have more connective sort of shared experience sex. But often, yeah, if you don't have the conversation, like, we don't know what's going on. And you often just hear statements like, we have no chemistry. It's like, what does that even mean? You know, after they do actually have great chemistry, but they're just having different kinds of experiences.
I didn't know that. That makes total sense. Like, I just think I go, oh, yeah, like, I feel like that's a light bulb moment for me. But yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah, I guess you're right. People do respond differently to sex. And like you said, when that energy is lower, where do you go? Like, what is your default? And recognizing and understanding that, and then knowing what your partner's is as well, is, oh, that would be game changing. It'd be so important.
Totally. And don't just because your energy is low and you're craving a release, don't just use your partner as like a self-pleasure device, you know, which I think lots of people fall into the habit of. It's like, well, I'm craving, you know, X, and you're here, and so I'll just get my needs met. And the other person, if they're a partner engagement style, they end up feeling used for their body. Yeah. And the other person's having wonderful trance sex, and it's, you know, it's not working. So it's about, let's reframe what what we, yeah, how we initiate sex, the kind of sex that we're having, and what both our needs are actually as well.
Yeah. I think this whole conversation has just re-underlined to me how important your job and your job role is, because it's not something I initially think about or would refer people to or whatever, because it's not in my direct world of things, like doctors are and gastroenterologists are. But when I went, like, after this conversation and having unpacked all that around it and knowing that all the women I work with, often sex is, you know, there's so many handbrakes onto it and there's so much lack of communication and there's so many things going on there that I just think, oh yeah, of course, like, your job role is so important and the value you bring to people's lives because of the way you're opening up communication, connection, those things. Like, it's just, you can't put a value on that kind of stuff. Like, no. It just, the work you're doing is incredible, and the way you're, yeah, not only changing people's lives, but it goes outside the bedroom. Like, I think that's where it comes back to. It's not just sex, it's communication, it's connection, it's play, it's quality of life, it's all those other areas that you're then impacting, which I just love.
Yay, I'm so glad that was your takeout. So that obviously makes me very happy. Yeah, very happy. And you're right, it's mindset shift. It's really often, it's a comeback. It's not always, it's just so often not about the sex itself. Mm. It's about the mindset of this relationship and making sure we both feel wanted and desired and sexually confident, and, you know, and the energy that gives us as two individual people going out and about in life is worth it. And often, you know, it isn't about changing the number of times you have sex, actually. It's the quality of intimacy you're having day to day, you know, these little moments where you leave in the morning and you give each other a kiss goodbye, how you come back together, you know, how you connect and feel that energy throughout your lives, rather than just, yeah, as you said, 9 o'clock on a Tuesday, I guess I'm gonna have to have sex, which is not what sex should be. It should be, you know, yeah, how you have that energy together.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think the listeners will love that. There's, you've put so much value in this podcast, and we are very spoiled. For those listening, I will link Alice's website, social links into the show notes, but it is www.alicechild.com.au, or you can find her on socials where she shares heaps of awesome stuff, which is at Alice Child Official. And yeah, you've got your workshops and bits up there. You've got good information. Sign up to her newsletter is also my yes, hint. I think that was straight from the website, maybe. I think I submitted a form, so mine would have gone in that way, but I'm pretty sure people can just hop straight in from the website.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, there's so much value in the email chains you send out. So thank you for making that available to us. And yeah, for anyone in person around Sydney area, you can go to her workshops, but otherwise, Pillowface online, and you can connect with Alice online as well. So thank you so much for being here. It was an absolute pleasure. You're a wealth of knowledge, and we're spoiled to have you in our ears.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a really fun chat.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Empowered Hormone Podcast. If you know a female who needs some empowerment, please forward, repost, tag, or share, and let's get women talking.